Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Forma, a podcast featuring conversations with authors, teachers, creators, and leaders who are carefully contemplating the nature and practice of classical education and the arts. I'm David Kern. In this episode, we're bringing you an interview that I conducted with Jake Menzel of the Bookening Podcast, a podcast which is, like our Close Reads podcast, attempting to offer a Christian perspective on literature, or rather, a Christian discussion on the great books. They've talked about books ranging from the Iliad and the Odyssey to C.S. Lewis and Harry Potter, from Charlotte's Web and A Wrinkle in Time to Remains of the Day and Mansfield Park and far beyond. If you want to learn more about their podcast, you can look for The Bookening wherever you get your podcasts, or you can head over to warhornmedia.com/The Bookening. That's B-O-O-K-E-N-I-N-G. Jake and I chatted about his evolving love of books, the way they helped him endure some troubling times as a youth, as a young person, and what they've meant to him as an adult. We talked about the proper place of the great books in our lives, and we talked about a lot more. So I hope you'll enjoy that conversation. Before we get to that, though, this episode is brought to you by the Honors College at Azusa Pacific University, where they are preparing the next generation of Christian leaders through a great books course of study that emphasizes faith, wisdom, and virtue. Honors students at Azusa Pacific enjoy several benefits, including an honors scholarship, small Socratic-style classes, a curriculum with no secondary textbooks, exams, or busy work, exemption from general ed courses, access to honors housing, and free trips to world-class arts experiences across Southern California. If you'd like to learn more about the Honors College at Azusa Pacific University, you can head over to apu.edu/honors. Again, that's apu.edu/honors. So thanks to the Honors College at Azusa Pacific University for supporting this show and making this episode possible. All right, with that, we'll kick it over to my conversation with Jake Menzel of the Bookening Podcast. Well, first of all, I just want to say thanks for joining me here on the podcast. Thanks for spending some time setting aside some time for a conversation about books.
Yeah, it's great to be on. Great to be here.
So you are a co-host of a popular Christian book podcast, whatever the genre is that we're the two podcasts that are.
We've discovered you can't quite call it a Christian literature podcast because then people think that you're reading Frank Peretti and stuff like that. So I think we call it a literature podcast for Christians I wouldn't even really describe myself as the co-host. I'm a guy who's there and ready to go and contribute best as I can. Nathan's the host, the humble and obedient host. He's the leader.
All right.
Yeah, he's the maestro.
So you're a pastor, right?
That's right. I am. I'm an associate pastor of Clearnut Church in Bloomington, Indiana.
Yeah. Oh, nice. So where'd you come from? Like, where's your ancestry from, but like, where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Evansville, Indiana. Evansville is a city of about 200,000 to 300,000 people down on the Ohio River, right on the border of Indiana and Kentucky. Grew up in a broken home, in and out of church, public school education. Came up to Bloomington, Indiana to do my undergrad at Indiana University.
You're a Hoosier, huh?
That's right, through and through. And although my dad and my uncle both went to Purdue, so the big in-state rivals for us. But, so there may be
that
a little
Notre
bit
Dame,
of,
right?
Yeah. So there may be a little bit of rebel streak in me. but yes, I came up to, I started walking with the Lord around my senior year of high school, came up to Indiana University to do my undergrad work, got my undergraduate degree in religious studies, was planning to go to seminary. By the end of my time at IU, I got connected with Clear Nut Church here in town.
Okay.
I had been, the religious studies program at IU is intense. It's a really strong program. Where you end up reading a lot of philosophy and philosophy of religion and all of the influential thinkers of the last couple hundred years. You're studying New Testament theology with these pagans who think Paul didn't write half of the New Testament. And
right. Yeah. I've been in those classes.
Yeah. Very, very difficult to maintain your faith. And by the end of my time at IU, I had been really spiritually dry and burned and living in sin, and had an opportunity to run into a pastor from Clear Nut Church who just sort of started talking to me about my life and my sin and calling me to faith and repentance. And I abandoned my plans to go to seminary. I abandoned my plans to, I was also thinking about grad school. I took a job as a commercial painter. I got married, to my girlfriend, and then our church has a small pastoral training institute. And after a year of working and then getting married, I started the pastor's college, and it's just a low key model. Low key is not really a good word for it, because it's really intensive. It's actually the best education that I've had, just in terms of its small class sizes. It's really Socratic in how it's taught. You're arguing through old texts. So we're reading Calvin's Institutes. We're reading, you still get your Greek and your Hebrew and your church history and all the essentials of a seminary education, but it's in the context of a local church where your character is being shaped and formed and you're being put to work.
Kind of like an apprenticeship sort of model.
Like an apprenticeship, Paul and Timothy kind of thing, which is something that I really wanted for a lot of reasons, mostly for personal accountability. And I really wasn't worried about not getting my seminary degree at that point. I graduated from the college. It's a 3-year program. In terms of intellectual rigor, I'd put it up there at the top of any education that you could get. Even though it's not accredited or anything like that. So that was sort of the route that I took. And, by God's grace, in the process of my time at the pastor's college, I worked myself into a job. The church wanted to hire me, instead of send me out. And, so they did. And I've been here, ever since. So, I've been at the church now for 12 or 13 years. And I've been on staff for about 8 to 10, something like that. I'm bad with dates.
So did all that time reading, Calvin and, the other books that you were mentioning there.
Yeah.
Did that kind of play a part in your learning to like love literature and stuff, or was that,
yeah,
that was kind of always there?
Well, So I was public school educated. For me, books growing up, they were an escape from my life. I grew up in a broken home. The first real time in my life where I realized what books could do for me, just in terms of transporting me to a new world and away from the realities of my life, was in third grade. And I, had a teacher that had us read The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And I convinced my dad to buy me the entire series. And I read all the Chronicles of Narnia and just loved it. And so for me, I loved literature, but not in a, you know, I'm getting something out of this kind of way, or even that I should. It was more just like, I want an escape from my life. Huck Finn was that for me. It wasn't until high school, I hit Shakespeare. And I often didn't read. I wasn't the kind of kid that was going to read. I was too cool to, like, you know, yeah, I'm not going to read Blitz of Science. Yeah. Definitely not going to show up and act like I've read, but there was this teacher my freshman year of high school, and she gave these ridiculous quizzes with these stupid details, like what color was the bag that Pip carried on page 247 of Great Expectations. And it's like daily reading quizzes. Like,
yeah.
And there was just no way to game the system with her. And so I was forced to read, and I read Shakespeare.
She manipulated you into reading.
Yeah, she did. She did. And it was successful. And what happened is, Shakespeare blew my world apart. And I know that this sounds like the dopiest thing. It's Shakespeare, right? Shakespeare. But what I found in Shakespeare, like, I loved Mark Twain. I loved Huck Finn. Like, I thought Mark Twain was super cool because he, like, kind of sneers at everybody and, you know, he really gets how dumb people are. And yeah, that was really appealing to me. Then I read Shakespeare and I found somebody that understood me better than I understood myself. And I had this, you know, I wanted so badly to be known and understood and, by somebody. My first taste of that, I want to say, was Shakespeare, somebody that really knew and understood me, understood people, understood human nature, somebody that could teach me how to grow as a person and how to interact, you know, how to. So Shakespeare just sort of, he's the one I point to say, yeah, this is where I learned to love literature and love reading. But because of sort of my background, I never was really exposed to a lot of good literature. And, you know, I was sort of a part of that jock crowd. And so it wasn't cool to read, you know, anything that anyone would consider a great book.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until my, you know, later high school, college, early 20s that I started actually reading. And then I was into, you know, theology, and but I made good friends with Nathan Alberson, who's the host of our show now, and Brandon Chasteen, who came to IU to do his PhD in English Lit, our show started. The real roots of our show was one night we were out on the back porch at Brandon's house, and we were talking Flannery O'Connor, and my favorite O'Connor story is The River. And for if anybody's read the story, for reasons I'm not going to read the story and read between the lines of what I've said, and you'll understand why. So we read the story out loud. Brandon read it out loud on the back porch, and we ended just crying and had a really great conversation about it. And Nathan and I had been talking for a while about wanting to start start podcasting. When would this have been? Something like 3 years ago.
So did you already have an audience of people in mind, or were you just like, we're just going to start talking and see what happens?
We just decided we were going to start talking and see what happens. I think we had looked in, I don't know if close reads was a thing when we looked, but we didn't find it if it was. And so we just thought, well, there's nothing out here on just Christians trying to process literature in a way that's faithful to God, that honors God, and that is helpful to people. That's not trying to be proud or pretentious or anything like that, but just trying to be helpful. And we had good chemistry together, and it was really Nathan's thing. He was the one that pushed it forward and made it happen. And, you know, we decided we'd make it easy on ourselves from the beginning. We started with Pride and Prejudice, which is a book that Nathan had just made me read for the first time. Hmm. I'd never read Austin, and I had a very wrong impression of Austin, and he corrected that. So for me, you know, part of the joy of the podcast that we started, The Bookening, is just I get to go along for the ride and get a lot of the books that I've missed at the hands of people with friends that I trust and that I love and that I love discussing these books with. Our show is really just like three friends sit down and discuss things they love. Mm-hmm. And so, and Brandon's brilliant. He really is. And he brings a lot just in terms of, you know, he's PhD, ABD. He was going to finish and move away. And, his brother moved here and joined him in the business venture that he had been using to get through grad school. And that business started to take off, and he loved being around the church, and we got the show, and he's just like, well, maybe I'll just hang and make this business work and satisfy my literature longings with the podcast. And so, that's sort of how we came to have what we have. Mm.
Were you surprised that anyone was listening at first? Or did you know, like,
nobody was at first.
Yeah.
We had, Nathan and I had started basically, we have a lot of things going on at our church that we had just sort of been trying to pull together. We had a little print magazine that we ran, that had a circulation of like 1500 or 2000 and, just a small little thing. And it was quarterly, and we gave it away for free. And so we had a little bit of an audience with that, and it was just practical Christian. We would talk about anything and everything, and there'd be humor and sarcasm and parody and all kinds of stuff like that. And, our senior pastor was starting to write books, and, our church's band was starting to set the Psalms, to do fresh settings of the Psalms to music. And Nathan and I were helping with that. And so was Brandon, helping make that happen. So all of a sudden we had these things sort of converging. And we thought, you know, we just need to sort of pull this into a little multimedia ministry and put it out there and see what happens. And, trying to answer your question, it just sort of all happened at once. And, and The Bookening was the forerunner into the world of podcasts for us, where it was our lab. It was like where we could figure things out, figure out if we could even make a podcast work. So we weren't even really concerned about having too much of an audience at first. We just thought, if we do a quality show, if we love it, if we love the books that we're doing, if we have good chemistry, it'll be helpful to people and it will grow, or it won't. And if it doesn't, if God's not blessing it, it's not growing, then that's okay. Mm-hmm. At least we'll have an excuse to read through great books together and enjoy each other's company and grow ourselves.
Yeah.
And you know, God has blessed it. It has grown, and it's grown tremendously, and it's been a lot of fun for us. And it's now one of five podcasts that we have. That's sort of the story. Yeah. We just wanted to be helpful to people, helpful to families. And we did feel like we had something to say, you know, something to bring to the conversation that other people weren't bringing. So
do you think that, like, is there any, well, like, what surprised you about the way people have responded? Or, like, you know, is there a book that you were sort of surprised that people loved as much as they did? Or did you, do you guys get the feedback from people where they're like, I can't believe you think this about this book or whatever?
Oh yeah, we get that all the time. but for the most part, what surprises, what, I don't know if maybe Nathan would say this doesn't surprise him. But what's been a joy, what's been super fun has been just the number of people out there that we're just their friends. We're their book club.
Yeah.
They come,
yeah. And we've seen that too. It's crazy.
Yeah. And so, they just think of us as their, we're their friends. They're sitting down with us and they're talking with us, more like a fly on the wall, but they feel like they've, you know, just sat down and talked through great books with friends, that they love and that they trust and that they, don't always agree with, but find helpful or insightful one way or another, or challenging and funny. We try to keep things as light and funny as we can, where we can, and serious and sincere. You know, we don't want to take ourselves too seriously. We want to take, and we also, we don't want to take literature too seriously, to be honest. We want it to be in its proper place in our lives. And that's a big part of what we have to say is, there's a lot of value to great literature, to great fiction. But also needs to be in its proper place, which is, you know, beneath scripture, beneath just being an ordinary, humble Christian who, loves his husband or wife, loves his family, serves his church, serves his community, does a good job at work, whatever.
Yeah.
And so yeah, there've been certain things that we've done that, that people have not been happy with, but that's like, okay. We just do that into running book? Jokes.
Or like the, your perspective, like your opinions on a book, because, you know, people love books. They
sure do. And they hold certain ones precious. So, the very first, let's go ahead and throw the dirty laundry out there for you. That's maybe, you know, what some of it is and you're just hoping that I'll do it. So I'll just put you out of your misery. The very first, real controversial take that we had was on, Winnie the Pooh and A.A. Milne. which is, we love A.A. Milne and we love Winnie the Pooh and we think Milne is hilarious and awesome. We also think that there's something about Milne that is, condescending and patronizing to children in a way that we don't really like a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And so we worked really hard to sort of tease that out. And the other thing that was surprising to Brandon and I, because we both have kids, Nathan doesn't, is, you know, when we do a kid's book on our show, we always read it to our kids. Mm-hmm. And whenever I read a book to my kids are always engaged and they're always excited about it. And I've got kids from 10 down to 2. And so, but when it came to Winnie the Pooh, they were like any other book, they were engaged, but there was just something there that just wasn't, like, they weren't excited about it. It wasn't quite connecting. It was more funny to me and my wife than to them. A lot of things were going over their heads. And I know that, you know, really great great children's literature is doing a good job of getting down on the knees and speaking to the kids while also having, you know, some good jokes or whatever for mom and dad. E.B. White's a master of that sort of thing. There are lots of authors out there that are like that, but there was something about Milne that was just, we just didn't quite like the way that he was talking to the kids. So we teased that out and we got a little hyperbolic in how we teased that out. And so that got,
people got riled up.
People got very, very upset about that because they love Milne.
And, did you lose any listeners, you think?
Yeah, probably. Probably we lost some listeners because of that. I think it was still in the early days in, I think that, most people, I mean, certainly we didn't, like, in our numbers, like in our statistics, we didn't see any big drops or anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, there are people that I know that, decided that we weren't the show for them if we were going to trash A.A. Milne, which we didn't trash him, but people just can't even hear, criticism of certain authors. So
I'm sure you've horrified plenty of people who are listening right now.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I know they're going to go listen and they're going to think, oh man, these guys are idiots. Like they don't appreciate A.A. Milne. No, we love A.A. Milne. He's great. I really think, and this is sort of where we came down, that Milne is more fun the older you get, or the it's like when you're in college, like you go and you read A.A. Milne and it's a really fun, sweet commentary on childhood, and it's sad and sweet.
Yeah.
And it's almost like that's the best demographic for A.A. Milne's the stories. Now, we didn't talk about the poetry. Poetry is another story. There's no hesitations in any way about the poetry. The poetry is amazing.
And then there's
he's the genius.
I mean, there are some, complex things going on just in his life and all that kind of stuff.
Right. And we talked about that too. And we always do this with authors where we spend time just talking about, Brandon does a big sort of, we call it the contextual text, and he's from Texas. And he talks about the biography of the author and places him sort of in the work in literary history. And certainly, I mean, I think Milne's relationship with his son is deeply connected to what's going on in those stories, and his resentment of those stories, his resentment of being sort of stuck with Winnie the Pooh his whole life when he had aspirations to be more than just a children's author. Yeah. I think there's a lot going on behind the scenes and underneath the surface that if you're sensitive, you can pick up on. And and if you pick up on it, there's some things to maybe not be so comfortable with. We talk about all of that in that episode. You can go listen to it and get as angry as you want.
What's the most popular, what book led to the most popular episodes?
It's hard to tell for us right now because we switched services.
Yeah, we did too.
Yeah. And we lost all our stats. So, definitely early on, it was Pride and Prejudice, East of Eden, Anna Karenina. Those were some of the early books that were really hot for us. And that just sort of have real sort of staying power, people going back through the archives and always listening. Right now, we just finished up a series on, or are about to finish up, I'm not quite sure. We may do another episode. We got another episode coming out a week from this recording. I don't know when this is going to air. And then we may do even one more episode on Harry Potter and J.K. Rowling. So maybe like 8 or 9 episodes by the time we're done. That's been really hot for us. Because you know what? Turns out people really like Harry Potter. I don't know if you've noticed this.
Yeah, that is a thing. It's like for a while now, I've had enough time to pick up on it. Have you had any negative feedback about that from the Christian? Like, how could you type stuff?
You know, we haven't. And I've been surprised that we haven't. I think that maybe the reason why we haven't, I don't know. Maybe if I asked Nathan, he would say, well, you don't see all the feedback, and we have gotten negative feedback about it. But, and that's true. I don't run our social accounts or anything like that. And he doesn't either, but he's more closely connected to that sort of thing than I am. But, one of the things that we were careful to do, early on in the Potter series is we went ahead and we made in our first or second episode, we went ahead and made the case, for why Christians should not read Harry Potter. And we did as good a job of that as we could. And in making space for people who have a conscience issue with Harry Potter to not feel any pressure and to feel validated, in their decision not to read Harry Potter. And then we turned around and in the following episode, made a case for Harry Potter being something that you could you can read in good conscience and Christian liberty. And, we did our best to do justice. I think, to every all sides of those arguments, and came down on the side of liberty with caution. But we love those books. It's no secret. Anybody listening, there's a reason why I did 8 or 9 episodes on them. And it's not that we think that they're great classics or anything like that, that they're going to, that they hold a candle to Tolkien or anything, but they are a lot of fun. And so, my take is that I think we must have done a pretty good job of sort of recognizing where everybody's coming from, good enough that people haven't felt a need to
be too combative.
Yeah, be too combative with our take.
Well, that's disappointing.
Yeah, I know, right?
You gotta have someone's got to be on the internet trolling you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they just troll us on Milne.
Yeah, I guess they get it out. Yeah. Now you guys have. Well, there's been some like booking close reads back and forth.
Yeah, we were in a flame war there for a while, weren't we?
Yeah, it was like, well, yeah, for like, it's just kind of disappointing that kind of died out, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe we should bring it back.
Yeah, maybe we should. So, but you don't have any control of that. You're saying.
Oh, the social stuff. Well, yeah. I have input into it, but no, I don't. I don't have control of it. No.
You're not the one starting flame wars.
No. I don't start flame wars. I just fan the flames behind the scenes.
Right. So. As you know, that's probably the smartest way to do it. You can't. It's not that's right. Less likely to get burned yourself.
I stay out of the line of fire. I can come on your show and have plausible deniability. And
so do you? So you're talking about the idea of like it's Christians reading literature is less than a Christian podcast about literature.
Yeah.
Do you, have you felt like you've had to sort of, cultivate a defense, or maybe defense isn't the right word. I mean, I guess that perhaps is something we could talk about, but a Christian perspective or a Christian way of reading. I was going to say worldview, but I don't really mean that. I mean more like a Christian approach to the books that you're talking about. Or do you not, or is that too finely defined for what you think you guys are trying to get after?
That's an interesting question. I'm going to try to work my way out of it. In starts and fits here and see if I can get somewhere. We definitely, I think in some part we're men in process and really trying to develop what we think and have over the course of the last 3 years of this show, what we think about, how to read literature in a Christian way and where it should fit in our lives. And so, one of our big things, and we really have learned a lot just from going back to Shakespeare, Austin, the place that Brennan has a really nice spiel when he talks about Shakespeare on our show, about how Shakespeare would have considered himself not to be a genius or an artist, but a craftsman, like a carpenter. He had a job. His job was to work with words and to do the best job he could working with words. And he had no idea that anything he wrote was going to really last. He was trying to put bread on the table. And that's not the way that plays work. Plays, when you die, your folios are burned or whatever, and nobody keeps them. It just wasn't the way that things worked back then. He was entertaining people. He was a craftsman. And that idea has been really compelling to us. The idea that Jane Austen, she wrote her novels while watching her nieces and nephews, you know, sort of just like on the side. She was really just like a good aunt and a good Christian woman who's doing her and trying to entertain her nieces and nephews. And she ended up writing these masterpieces of English literature. Because she was just doing a good job, right? That idea of literature and the arts best serve people when they're in their proper place in our own lives, whether you're an artist or a consumer of art, has been a big idea that we've been working on and thinking through and developing for ourselves.
They're not idols.
Yeah, they're not idols. You got to crush the idols. When we try to, like, you know, literature is, you know, this great big, you know, pretentious thing. You know, that's not the way that Shakespeare approached it. It's not the way that Austin approached it. And that's what made them awesome, is they were just humble people. They weren't trying to change the world. They weren't trying to redeem the culture through the arts. They were trying to serve people with their craft, and they were craftsmen. They're trying to serve people they knew and that they loved and that they cared about. And so, I mean, I know that that's, like I said, I'm just going to sort of bumble my way through and trying to tease this out. A lot of the best artists, I think, have had that approach. And I think that as consumers of the arts, as participants in the arts, however you want to say that, as readers, how about that? It sounds the least pretentious of all. as readers, our job is to see literature for what it is, which is a nice little bit of art that hopefully casts light on the way God made the world and the way that in human nature, and let it be helpful in its proper place, and learn your lessons from Austin, and learn your lessons from Tolstoy, and learn your lessons from whoever else. Learn your lesson from Ernest Klein, which is, I think, don't read Ernest Klein. So, I mean, I think part of our approach has been just to constantly insist that Christians always be discerning, and they never stop being discerning, no matter who they're reading or why. We want to read the classics. There's a reason that they're a classic. There's a reason that they're a part of the canon. There's a reason why they've held up for hundreds or thousands of years. We want to understand that and show respect and deference to our fathers who have determined this, you know, over the course of centuries. But that doesn't mean that we then turn and treat these works of art as sacred texts. We don't stop being discerning Christians when we're reading Homer just because Homer's been around for forever, or when we're reading Shakespeare or Austin. We engage everything because it's so easy to just say, oh, you know what I want to do is I just want to read the good things. Well, I'm going to exercise all my discernment up front, and that means I'm going to only consume the Western canon and nothing younger than 100 years old, and then I'll be safe and I can shut down and not be discerning. Well, this just doesn't work that way.
Yeah. So how do you balance I'm trying to think of what I actually am trying to ask. So how do you balance what you're describing there? Mm-hmm. It's sort of the pursuit of, or the identification of, like, transcendent realities in literature. Like not making mm-hmm. them an idol, not making them more than they should be, letting it have its proper place in your life, in your reading life, in your spiritual life, and so forth, while still saying there is something of transcendent, sort of eternal value here. And that's one of the reasons why this book has passed the test of time and sort of been accepted into the canon of great literature, capital G, capital L, whatever. So how do you identify that while balancing this sort of proper place, not letting it be an idol?
Well, I mean, I think that is the dance. And I think, you know, you have to go back to that classic Augustine quote, all truth is God's truth. When an author touches on something transcendent, and you're caught up in it, and you have that cathartic moment where you finish East of Eden and you're crying for a half hour because he touched on something deep and transcendent about the nature of fatherhood and forgiveness. What you have to do is be able to take a step back and, you know, you can embrace that moment, but you have to be able to see that the reason why he hit on that is because he understands something about the way that God made the world and the way that God made us. And you have to be able to see it all in the light of redemption, of scripture, of God's redemptive story. And you don't want to get too mystical about that or too over spiritual about it, 'cause again, it's just the book. But at the same time, books like that can, you know, God can use them, in your life to help you understand your relationship to your dad, help you understand, all kinds of things. I picked East of Eden because, I mean, that is what I did. I finished East of Eden and I cried for a half hour or something dumb like that, you know, because I cry at everything that's the truth about it. That's my dirty secret.
yeah, it's at least twice now you've referenced that.
Have I?
you said the O'Connor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I guess
I did say that, didn't I? Yeah.
I mean, I would never do such a thing.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what that, you know, I don't even know what that's like. So, have you found then that, since you have referenced that twice now, have you found that, that the reason that literature has been so meaningful to you and that, meaningful enough that you'd have a podcast that you'd put that much time into,
sure,
to sharing the experience of reading with other people, is that because of the way that it's sort of opened up, things about yourself or helps you process things or reveal things that you, that were kind of buried deep inside you? Or is that not something you try to avoid that happening publicly?
No. If you listen to our show, you'll hear us get very personal, and there are authors that we read that mean, a lot to each one of us because of the impact they've had on our lives personally, whether it was when we were kids or young adults or even now.
Do you avoid certain books because of, like, do you talk about them beforehand and say, oh, that book's not good for me because of what it triggers or whatever?
Yeah, there are things like that for us. And there are things like that.
Public experience is too much.
Yeah, well, it's not like... you know, if it's going to be, you know, this triggers, you know, memories of my childhood or whatever, we're not going to shy away from that, at all. Yeah, okay. We're not going to be afraid to cry on mic, even if that's what happens, we'll be careful in how we talk about certain things in our past, but, you know, this is real life, and this is what a good author and a good book can do. And we want people to experience the good of that along with us, and we want to help them experience that. Sometimes, you know, certain things do that for some people and not for others. That's okay. But that's where our show's at. At its best is when we've got something that's deeply personal to one of us because of how this book impacted us years ago or because how it's impacting us now. And I can tell you what some of those books are. For me, it was Huck Finn. And, you know, a lot of what I ended up saying in the recording didn't make it to air. That's okay. But, you know, for Nathan, it's East of Eden and Something Wicked This Way Comes. And for Brandon, I think we might have one coming up soon, but Yeah, we just have these, you know, different places in our lives where, for one reason or another, God's used a book or an author to open up something to us about ourselves or about a relationship that we have or about himself even. And we want to let ourselves be vulnerable and open about that and process that verbally for people and hopefully give them some hooks to help them process it for themselves in a way that honors God and isn't making an idol out of the book or the author.
Is there a book that you liked more after doing it on the show than you thought you would? That, or that you were just sort of like, we're doing this because somebody, one of the other guys likes it or because it feels like you should, but then you ended up liking it more?
Way more than I expected. Well, I didn't know what I was in for with East of Eden. And so that's a huge one where I love that book and I didn't know what to expect. And I didn't.
Y'all do these long books.
Yeah, we do. We also do short books. I reference the long ones cause they're the ones that, you know, have often are the ones that have impacted me the most, but,
I feel like if we did a long book like that, we'd be doing it for forever.
Well,
I guess our approaches are a little different.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we do a book a month, and it doesn't matter how long the book is. We're going to cover it in the space of a month. And so, you know, we're going to give you 3 or 4 episodes, no matter if it's Charlotte's Web or Anna Karenina.
Yeah, so I guess you're trying to decide these are the things we're going to talk about and you're going to specifically focus on things. Yeah,
that's right. And so we just sort of focus on big stuff and we get into details where it's helpful.
Yeah.
And that allows us to just sort of kind of keep moving along, do a book a month, not get caught in the weeds. We don't have the patience to do what you guys do. I'm glad you're doing it. I'm not saying, I think we're just not the kinds of guys that.
No, I get it. You know? I think probably a lot of listeners, like in some ways, there's a lot of listeners who don't have interest in what we're doing either. Right. Like they just don't want to spend as much time on a specific book or they don't have the patience for it or that's
but
that's
then fine. But then there are a lot of people out there that really appreciate that sort of deep dive, you know, chapter by chapter, point by point approach. But yeah, that's not us. That's not us for sure. And so, one book that I was really surprised by, I think one of the books I was most surprised by, just to kind of keep answering your question, was My Antonia by Willa Cather.
Oh, yeah. And
it wasn't like that book had a big impact on me or anything like that. I just did not expect it to be as enjoyable top to bottom as it was. I just really enjoyed reading that book. I loved it.
I have a theory about that book.
Yeah.
So I studied that book in college. My theory is that book, its reputation has been sullied by the way they design it and lay it out and do the book covers and stuff. That's funny. I feel like if somebody laid it out and designed the book cover in the way that a lot of books are coming out now, the way we think about it would be different. Because a lot of times it's like a Dover book. And it's small print and there's a lot of text on the page and it just feels old, but it's actually, it's actually kind of a very interesting book about a very interesting character. And if they had a different layout and was made to look a little bit less like depressing the way it was designed, it would have, people would think about it differently.
Yeah. It looks like depressing adult Laura Ingalls Wilder, but depressing.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
yeah.
And it's not that it's, no. I really just enjoyed it for a whole lot of reasons, but so yeah, I don't know. There's another one I'll just throw out there for you. Something Wicked This Way Comes. I was a little dubious about and really loved that book.
Yeah. So, okay. I'll let you go here in a second. Last question, I guess, is
sure.
So there's all the stuff you're reading for the show and all that. What are you reading now for yourself that's not like for the show? Like, do you ever fit any other reading time in? Or I'll put it this way, like, what is your sort of genre, guilty pleasure genre reading that you like to read that's maybe not for the show? It's just sort of like this is how I spend 30 minutes or an hour if I'm just like, it's your pleasure reading.
Yeah. my pleasure reading outside of the show.
Right. Not that the show is not pleasurable, but like,
well, it is. Yeah. 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 I like to squeeze in short stories by, Stephen Milhauser, Dennis Johnson, and Dennis Johnson, nice. Yeah, a guy that I would, you're talking about a guilty pleasure. There are things about that guy and his stories that, you know, you need to be really careful about.
Right. Yeah.
But
yeah,
he's also a master. He's just a master craftsman. And so that sort of thing. The other thing that I would say is a guilty pleasure that I did recently is I actually went back and reread, I've reread parts of Harry Potter, since doing the show.
And, nice.
And I'm just a sucker for, I'm a sucker for plot and the craftsmanship, of intricate plots, and Rowling, that is what she's best at. And I think it's just a lot of fun. So
one of our, contributors, Heidi, is a huge Harry Potter fan. So
there you go.
I wonder if she's listened to your shows. I'm going to ask her about that.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Jake, thank you for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
So where should people, find the bookending? I mean, where, I guess anywhere podcasts are available, right?
Anywhere podcasts, Stitcher, are available.
Apple Podcasts.
Everywhere.
Podcast Addict. You guys do SoundCloud, or what are you, what's your...
We don't do SoundCloud.
Yeah, we don't either.
But pretty much everywhere else. Yeah.
And then you've got all these other shows. So what's the best place they want to learn about, if people want to learn more about the other stuff you're doing, just go over to the Warhorn website or something.
Yeah. Warhornmedia.com. You can find all of our shows. Cool. Sound of Sanity is, just, one that I think your listeners might find especially interesting. Because we tell stories, we have plot episodes, we have parody. But it's just a sort of, the whole idea of that show is, we live in an insane time, and it's hard to feel sane as a Christian. And the whole point of that show is to remind everybody that we're the sane ones. And so, but yeah, we got a handful of other shows there that people can go and check out, warhornmedia.com.
Awesome. Cool. Well, I hope people do that. I hope you get some subscribers.
Thanks,
from
man.
Our listeners. And, thanks really for your time.
Appreciate
thanks for
being here. You having me on. It's been great.
Absolutely.